Welcome back to another episode of the Real Talk on Women's Health podcast with Essentia Health. I'm joined in this episode by family practice doctor Margaret Perko. Margaret, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So we're going to be talking about cervical screenings today, which is something that is so incredibly important for women. So can you explain the importance of cervical screenings and why they're just so important to women's health?
Yeah. So cervical cancer screening is better known as a pap smear. So that's usually what people are thinking of. I think some people assume that if they're having an exam, so a pelvic exam, that we're specifically looking at a pap smear, but I think that can be confusing. Some patients come in and they're actually getting tested for other infections. So they're getting tested for STDs or STIs, as we sometimes call them, such as chlamydia or gonorrhea. And so there can sometimes be a confusion about what we're doing when we're doing that type of exam. So we're basically looking at your cervix, which is a part of your body that is the entrance to your uterus. And we're screening for a cancer that can affect that part of the body. And that cancer is caused by the human papilloma virus, or the HPV virus. And most people are exposed to it at some point in their life. I think the numbers are around 90% of people, both men and women, are exposed to HPV at some point in their life. But the majority of them will clear it on their own. So they don't have to do anything to get rid of it. It doesn't need any medicine. It doesn't need any specific treatment, but your body just knows how to figure out how to get rid of it. The HPV vaccine is super important because it does actually protect against cervical cancer. So the risk in people has gone down over time just because of that vaccine that prevents an infection, which then prevents a cancer.
How common is cervical cancer today? Where does that kind of stand?
Yeah, I actually looked this up because these are the things that I talk about with patients all the time. And I talk about how it's so exciting that we've had less and less of it. But I did look it up on the CDC. So according to the Center for Disease Control, from the years of 2017 to 2021, the annual rate of HPV in the United States is 47,984 people, new cases on average per year. And of those, 26,000 are in women and 21,000 are in men.
So are there any like symptoms or signs of cervical cancer that we should be looking out for?
No, that's why we do screening. So when I talk to patients about any sort of screening, whether that's cervical cancer screening or breast cancer screening or colon cancer screening, we're screening for things that don't have symptoms. So when you have cervical cancer, you wouldn't have discharge, you wouldn't have bleeding, you typically wouldn't have those symptoms unless it was in a very late stage of cervical cancer. So when we do screening tests, we screen for things that we can do something about. So for example, if you have a problem, if we have an abnormal test with your pap test, we do another test called a colposcopy. If that test shows us that you have advanced changes in the cells on your cervix or cervical cancer, there's treatments that we can do to remove those cells from your cervix and get rid of the cancer.
Well, when there's no symptoms like this, that does make it more important to get your cervical screenings.
Exactly.
So what are the current guidelines for getting cervical screenings and how often should we as women undergo this type of test?
Cervical cancer screening doesn't start until age 21. So when I was younger, I remember going in and anytime you had to get any sort of thing. So if you needed like birth control pills or if you wanted testing or other stuff, it was like pretty much expected that you would have a pap smear. And so screening started as soon as you might be sexually active or if you were doing, you know, other medicines or things. The current guidelines say that you don't need to start that early. So starting at age 21 is the starting point for cervical cancer screening. So at age 21, you come in and that would be part of your routine exam. So when you come in for your annual physical to talk about health screenings, so talk about your vaccines, talk about cancer screenings, the cervical cancer screening would start with a pap smear at age 21.
So we start at age 21. Can you take me through the process of cervical screenings throughout like the next few decades? Because yeah. I'm guessing there's a point where you might need them less or maybe not at all.
So guidelines for cancer screening are different depending on who you ask, but overall, there's a pretty uniform recommendation. So when you talk about screening, the people that make these recommendations, so one group is the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, the American Cancer Society, or the United States Preventive Services Task Force. These are all different organizations that review data and information about screening, and they come up with guidelines. But the overarching kind of agreement that people have is that starting at age 21, you should have screening every 3 years. And that screening should be with the pap test. So that's when you go in, you get a speculum, and we look at your cervix, and we take a little swab and test those cells to see if they're abnormal. If they're abnormal, you're coming in more frequently than that. after age 30, you can decrease how frequent. So I usually tell people, congratulations, you graduated. You don't have to have screening quite so often. So every 5 years, starting at age 30, and we combine the test at that point with HPV screening. So we're testing specifically for that virus, as well as testing for the abnormal cells, which is what the Pap test is looking at. That screening continues until age 65. After age 65, the recommendation is that you don't need cervical cancer screening anymore, as long as you haven't had abnormal testing in the past.
So over the past decade, I feel like it has changed how often you're supposed to be getting cervical screenings. Why is that?
So the information continues to change because we have more information. So we do a lot of Pap tests across the country and across the world, and we get more information on how frequently that the likelihood that you would have cancer would be. So part of that decrease in how frequent you need to screen is because we are also testing for that HPV virus. There's even a thought that as we have more and more people that are vaccinated against human papillomavirus with the HPV vaccine, that we'll have even less of a need for those screenings. And so it used to be, there was a point in time, it was every year.
I remember that. In my early 20s, it was every single year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Every single year you go in, you have a Pap test, and that's that. And now screening, you know, spaced out to every 3 years and then every 5 years. The other thought is that the likelihood of changes in your cervix go down as you get older. So you start out, and as you're younger, we're looking at that infection, you know, the rate that you would clear that HPV infection changes over time. And so as you get older, you can space out those screenings.
Are there any other things that you guys are looking at when you do cervical screenings and Pap smears aside from just cervical cancer or HPV?
The test itself isn't looking for anything different than that. However, in the lab technician or the pathologist that's looking at the actual cells can see if you had another infection. So typically they would tell us in the result and say, maybe you have a yeast infection, maybe you have bacterial vaginosis. Neither of those things are sexually transmitted and neither are related to cervical cancer, but they would tell us that you had them. And usually if that happens, we would tell you, hey, you have these abnormal things that are on here as well. Are you having any symptoms like vaginal discharge or odor or pain with intercourse? And we would recommend that you get antibiotics to treat those infections. In addition, when we do the exam, we're also looking at your cervix. So we're looking to see if there's anything that looks out of the ordinary. We're looking at the tissue inside of your vagina to see if anything looks abnormal. And we'll tell you about that or recommend treatment for different things if we were to see something different.
So because now the frequency of when you need to get cervical screenings is lesser than it used to be, let's brush up on like what women can do to prepare for this type of appointment. Like, are there certain things that we should be doing beforehand to ensure accurate results, like, you know, fasting or not drinking water, just something like that?
No, just show up. So it doesn't matter if you have your period, the test is still valid and it doesn't change the results of the test. Doesn't matter what point of your cycle that you're in. You don't have to be hydrated. You don't have to be, you know, fasting at all. And frequently when my patients come in, I will look at what things that they're due for. So for example, if someone came in and maybe we were checking up on some other medication, I would look and say, oh, you're actually were due for your Pap smear like a couple of months ago. Do you want to do that today? Or do you want to wait till another time? Because I also don't want to spring that on somebody, because I don't always love knowing that I'm going to have someone look at that part of my body without knowing about it. But I always offer and remind people that it's a good idea to get scheduled to get it done if they weren't planning on doing it that day.
Yeah, definitely. And then maybe we could put women's minds at ease, because I know that there's always those people that maybe don't go to the doctor because they're scared. They maybe don't want to know. So for anybody that might fall into that category listening, how can you put their mind at ease? Does this test hurt? Like, how simple and easy is it?
When I was growing up, the speculums were always made of metal, always cold, and just a really uncomfortable, like very kind of clinical feel to them, and really uncomfortable. Most of the time we use plastic speculums, and that's just been a change in what's available in resources. And I personally like the plastic ones better. I think they're less uncomfortable. There's different sizes of them. So we choose to use different sizes depending on the woman, depending on their size, depending on if they're sexually active, depending on if they have problems with their vagina that might make it more uncomfortable to have a different size speculum. So a plastic speculum, we look at the outside of your perineum. So that's like the area between your legs, right? So we're checking that out, looking to see what that tissue looks like. And then that speculum has a lubrication on it. So just like a gel on it, and that helps to slide it in. Usually I tell people, if you take some big deep breaths, wiggle your toes, kind of move yourself and distract your body, there's not a lot of discomfort from that. Kind of like putting in a tampon, maybe a little bit larger larger than that. But I always tell people, if you're uncomfortable at any point in the exam, if it makes you uncomfortable, if you don't feel good about this, we can always stop. So this is a screening exam. I'm not testing for something that's acutely causing you problems. I'm looking for something that you don't know that you have. And so if you're not comfortable on that day, we can always stop. We can talk about it. We can start over. We could come back a different day and we can try it at a different time.
So you mentioned earlier, there's no specific signs or symptoms that somebody might have cervical cancer. So is there any point where somebody might need to come in outside of their regular screenings?
Yeah. So the screening recommendations are if you have never had an abnormal pap. So we would say if you have never had an abnormal pap, every 3 years from ages 21 to 30, every 5 years from ages 30 and up. If they're abnormal, we have guidelines as to how frequently you need to recheck. So that could be as quickly as 6 months from now, or a year, or 3 years instead of the 5 years, depending on where you are at in that screening guidelines. In addition, over the age of 65, you might need to continue screening if you had an abnormal pap in the past, or if you had a history of cervical cancer. If you don't have a cervix, you don't need to do cervical cancer screening unless you previously had cervical cancer and your cervix was removed for that reason. So there's a lot of different reasons why we would change those guidelines, but usually it's related to having an abnormal pap.
We have been talking about how the frequency of needing these cervical screenings, you know, it's getting less and less because of advancements and changes. So can you talk about the advancements or changes in cervical screening techniques over the years, or maybe technology that people should be aware of?
So right now there hasn't been a lot of changes in how we have collected them. So like I said, change in like what the speculum looks like, change in what the swabs look like. But typically from your perspective as a patient coming in, you're not going to notice a lot of those differences. Those are things that we see. However, in early 2024, there was a new approval from the FDA that's actually pretty exciting. It's an opportunity for people to do a self-collection for a pap smear. So other places around the world have been doing this for a lot longer, and there's been research studies that have validated how effective these tests are. So basically, you would go to the office. The way that this current test is approved, you would come into the office, but no one would do an exam on you. You would either go into an exam room or a bathroom by yourself, and you collect the sample with a device that kind of looks like a tampon that you're putting in and just kind of collecting that sample yourself. And then we send it to the lab. So far, I don't think it's been used in the United States, or there's not places, definitely not where I currently work, do we have this stuff yet, but it was now approved as an option. So in the future, I think in the very near future, we'll probably have opportunities that you can collect your own pap screening and not have to have that exam.
Are there any advancements that impact the accuracy of test results?
There are some changes in what we're testing for. So there's multiple strains of human papillomavirus. So HPV types, there are some that are more likely to cause cervical cancer, and there are some that are more likely to cause infections like genital warts. So as we find out more types of those viruses, we can specifically target the testing towards those types.
So now let's talk about misconceptions or myths. And I love asking all of the doctors that come in here about these, because there are just so many misconceptions and myths about pretty much everything. So what are the common misconceptions surrounding cervical screening, or maybe questions that your patients ask you that they heard somewhere?
I think one of the confusing parts is like what we're actually testing for. So I've had multiple people come in and tell me, yeah, I had a pap. I went and had a pap because I had, you know, I had whatever was going on. I had discharge, I had pain. I wanted to test for things and I got a pap smear. The pap itself is not just a typical exam. So we can do that same exam. We can use the speculum. We use swabs. We do all those things to test for infections like chlamydia, like gonorrhea, like bacterial vaginosis and yeast infections. All of those things can feel the same to a patient. So you might think that you're having a pap test done, but unless we're sending the specific sample to the lab, we wouldn't have that information.
And I feel like probably another misconception is that it's very painful. But we already touched on that. You know, you put everybody's mind at ease. It's not painful. It shouldn't be painful.
Yeah. In the right setting, it shouldn't be painful. I think that there are people that are more sensitive. And so we are aware of that when we're talking to patients. And when I talk to individual patients, it's all about what that individual person wants and how they want to do their screening. And for some people, like you had mentioned, people don't necessarily want to know. So there's some people that say, I would rather not know this information. And they'll go years and years without following the guidelines for pap pap screening. And at some point, if they decide they want to change their mind, we can always do that.
So let's say you get an abnormal test result, which we've touched on a bit in this podcast episode so far. Can you discuss the importance of following up if you have an abnormal test result? Because that kind of falls under what we just mentioned, where some people might not want to know and they might not even like do that follow-up.
Yeah, so super important to follow up on that, because the lab test that we get with that initial pap is only a small sample of what's on your cervix. So if it's abnormal, like I said, the recommendation could just be that you come in more frequently and have a repeat pap sooner than when you were supposed to have a follow-up screening. However, there's multiple different things that could be abnormal that would require that you come in for a procedure called a colposcopy. So a colposcopy is likely slightly more uncomfortable than a typical pap smear, and it usually takes a bit more time. When you come in for a colposcopy, we use a speculum, either a metal or plastic speculum, putting it in the same way that we would when we're doing a pap test. However, when we're looking at your cervix, we're then looking more in detail at what it looks like with a special microscope. The microscope doesn't go inside your body. It just shines a light, and then we look through lenses so that we can see the cells on your cervix in more detail. We're then using vinegar, like just plain old vinegar, on these like big swabs. They're just made, you know, cotton swabs. And we swipe those over your cervix. And when the vinegar goes over your cervix, it will change what your cervix looks like. And if there's anything abnormal, it will have a different appearance than everything else. And if we see those abnormal things, we take a little snip, like a little kind of clip of cells, so a little bit more tissue, kind of like a pinch of your cervix, and then we test those under a microscope.
So can you share any success stories maybe from your career that shows that cervical screenings can help detect and prevent cervical cancer? I feel like it's a good time to ask that question because we're discussing how important it is to actually follow up.
Yeah, I've had a lot of people that, you know, have no clue, you know, that they've ever had this, that, you know, they've gone, you know, they've followed up, they've done their normal screenings, and then out of the blue, they have an abnormal screening, and we're able to pick up on that stuff really early. And then we're able to remove the abnormal tissue well before it's causing those major effects. And that's partly why the rates of cervical cancer have decreased. I couldn't find the data and I was looking for it because it was super exciting earlier this year. There was like a published article that said we now have less cervical cancer than we did before and more oral cancers this year for the first time. So typically we always are seeing that higher number of cervical cancer versus oral cancers that are caused by the human papillomavirus. And that's been a shift partly because of vaccination and partly because of all the screening that we do for cervical cancer.
Well, I was also going to ask you, what is your rate of survival if you do get cervical cancer? It sounds like if you stay on top of your screenings and everything and you find it early, it's totally treatable.
Yeah. So it's really good. And I don't have the exact numbers, but it's really rare. So typically if I'm seeing somebody that has cervical cancer that's advanced past that like initial stage, there's somebody who hasn't come in for screenings and hasn't been in a long time. It's really, really uncommon for you to need treatment outside of just getting rid of your cervix or getting rid of the abnormal parts of your cervix.
That's good news. I was almost scared to ask that question, but that is good news. So are there any specific risk factors or populations that should really be mindful of getting their regular cervical screenings?
I think everybody needs to be. So HPV, like I said, is really prevalent. Most people are exposed to it at some point in their life. So even if you have the same partner and you have been with the same partner for decades, there's still a possibility that you could have an HPV infection that is either passed between the two of you and just you know, one person clears it, passes it on to the next person, and you're just kind of sharing it, but your body knows how to clear it. And then at some point is not. So I've definitely had people that like have had the same partner and all of a sudden, you know, 1 year they have HPV and they didn't previously. And that triggers us to make sure we're screening them more frequently. So definitely something you want to just stay on top of no matter who you are. I think a lot of people assume that if they're sexually active that they are more susceptible to this, but certainly anybody that's ever had sex ever could be exposed to the HPV virus.
So nothing like smoking or drinking alcohol or anything that hasn't been linked to an uptick?
No, not in the same way that you would think about things like lung cancer.
Okay. So what are some potential barriers or challenges that women face when it comes to staying up to date date with cervical screenings? Like, I know women are just so incredibly busy. It can be tough to stay on top of all those things. So what are some of those barriers and how can we address those?
I think people just forget, right? So if you're healthy and you don't need to come to the doctor, most of the time you're not coming in for things. So for example, we don't see a lot of men coming into the clinic between the ages of like 20 and 40. And then at age 40, they're like, hey, by the way, I think I'm getting old and I need to do some like screening and talk about stuff. Women are often coming in a little bit more frequently because they're addressing more issues. They're either having babies and they need to, you know, see a healthcare provider, or they're asking for birth control and they need prescriptions. So they are coming in more frequently. But I think the biggest thing is just forgetting, right? So I do the same thing. Like when I go to the dentist, I always have to schedule my appointment 6 months out, because if I don't, I'll go a year without going in. So I always like to tell people, just get it on the books. You can always reschedule it, but just make sure that you're, you know, putting it on your calendar, because we all get busy.
Yeah, I do the very same thing. I was actually at the dentist yesterday and I said, just make my appointment, because otherwise I'm going to forget. So how can healthcare providers and organizations and really just all of us work together to improve awareness about cervical screenings for all women?
So I think it just needs to be a constant reminder. We do have alerts because of, you know, technology and the stuff that we have at Essentia where I work. We have those alerts that are like built into the system. So if you log into your app, the app tells you, hey, by the way, you're due for this soon. So it tells you about your mammogram. It tells you about your cervical cancer screening. It reminds you that you're due for something. I've had a lot of people that the computer maybe is not correct, or we didn't have records from someplace outside of the system, and they will make an appointment just because they got that alert on their phone. So they'll say, oh, I came in because you told me I needed to come in. And so it's actually nice that people are, you know, getting those extra alerts that they need to come in.
So before I let you go, is there anything that you want to touch on that maybe we didn't get to in this podcast?
I guess the only thing to remind people of is that cancers caused by HPV are prevalent in other people and other parts of the body. So cervical cancer is the one that we screen for, and that's why we do Pap tests. But HPV can cause, like I was talking about earlier, cancers of the mouth and the throat. It can cause penile cancers, and it can cause anus cancers. And those are in both men and women. So even though there's no specific screening test for those people, there is a Pap test that you can do, like an anal Pap test, in people that are at higher risk. And so getting that HPV vaccine does reduce the risk of all of those types of cancers.
Well, I think we've covered everything regarding cervical screenings. Dr. Margaret Perko with Essentia Health, thank you so much for being a guest.
Thank you.